You're listening to Dave White Presents.
Well, hello, everyone. Wes Britton here, and I've got to say, it is quite an honor to have our next guest on Dave White Presents. For many of you, if I simply say the name William Link, you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. And for the rest of you, well, trying to summarize his career be a little bit like trying to shoehorn the entire Sherlock Holmes canon into a tweet. It can't be done, but I'll give you some of his highlights. Along with his partner, Richard Levinson, he co-created Mannix, Columbo, Ellery Queen, well, a TV series at least, Murder, She Wrote. On his own, he helped work with Bill Cosby on the Cosby Mysteries. He's written countless, you know, stories for the Alfred Hitchcock magazine, the Ellery Queen magazine. And the one thing we're really going to be talking about today is a brand new book he has that's called The Columbo Collection, in which, as far as I know, the first time a creator of a television character came back to it years later and wrote short stories that will have our friendly Lieutenant Columbo out there doing it all over again. So we'll find out about a bit more about that as we bring on board William Link. Hi, Bill. Welcome to Dave White Presents.
Thank you very much, and I'll tell you something, Wes. I want you as my press agent. We'll work out a deal.
Well, all right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, maybe that's the one we'll make some money. Well, I'll tell you what, one place I wanted to start off with was your career in many ways kind of launched when you hooked up with a guy named Richard Levinson. Can you take a few minutes and talk about your friend and how you guys hooked up and all that?
When I was young, 12 years old, two schools amalgamated together, one from Philadelphia proper, and I lived in a community outside of Philadelphia called Elkins Park. And I was told by Dick's friends that I should look for a tall guy who wrote and read mysteries. And Dick was told by some of my friends, look for a short guy who writes and deals with mysteries. So we met at lunchtime the first day of junior high school, and we were writing that afternoon, and he became my best friend and vice versa. And we wrote everything, Broadway musicals, television shows, many, many short stories, four books. Two were novels. One was about our experiences in television. And we wrote until Dick's death in 1987, a very untimely death.
Oh, yes.
Wasn't that old, but I still miss Dick every day, and I think when I write now, he's really sitting on my shoulder. Bill, that's not a good line. Let's change that. No, that's a little contrived, that plot device, etc. Bernard Shaw once said, when you have a very important friend in your life, you do not lose that person by their death. You only lose that person by your own death. And I find that's absolutely true in the case of Dick Levinson.
How would you describe your different strengths in your collaboration? What did he bring to the table, and what do you think you brought?
We both had miraculously the same strengths. That's why I think we're really a dynamic duo. Dick was very good at structuring, as I am, at plotting, very good at characterizations, etc. And that's why, after his death, I could continue my career, thank the Lord, because we did have those mutual strengths. After Dick's death, I got a little psychiatric help because it was truly a shock. And I carried on. And I do not fail ever to mention him and how important he was in my life in any of the interviews that I do. you know, et cetera.
Now, I know you guys worked on a number of different TV episodes and the like. Was Mannix your the first series that you two created?
Yes. We took it to Desilu, and we pitched it, and they went for it. And happily, they got a very good star, who's a lovely man. I don't know if you ever met him. And it was our first hit. It ran, I believe, for 8 years on CBS. They changed various things in the original pitch, like they gave him a black secretary in Beverly Hills, and we could have never sold that, you know, just a detective in, you know, in Beverly Hills with a black secretary, not in those days. But that was our first big hit, and Columbo came a few years later. Columbo was originally a very successful stage play produced by an important Broadway producer in those days, Paul Gregory. And he produced the play. It toured all over the United States very successfully, as I said, and even played in Canada. And then, because we own the series, you never give up the copyright when you do a play. We sold it to Universal about 3-4 years later. And then when Peter Falk got involved, when we cast him, as you know, Wes, the rest is history.
Well, let's back up and do a little bit of that history. Because in that stage play, the character Lieutenant Columbo was really just a supporting character. He wasn't the lead, right?
Correct. It was played originally. Well, we first wrote it. There was a writer's strike in 1960 out here, and it was a long strike. It was 5.5 months, it turned out. And Dick and I went back to our favorite city, New York. We were both bachelors then. We rented a huge apartment, 72nd and Broadway, which was owned by a very good television and movie director, Stuart Rosenberg, who turned out to be an old friend of Peter Falk's. And we found out, you know, we always read the small print in contracts, especially the Writers Guild contracts. And we found out that during a strike, you could write for live television, but not for film television. And we saw there was a show on the air called The Chevy Mystery Show. It was a summer replacement for Dinah Shore, who was a big singer in those days.
See, and the USA wrote, in your Chevrolet.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely correct. And we wrote an hour show, and it was bought immediately, and we flew out to Burbank to see it performed live. And after that, the strike was still on. We figured, you know, we could really turn this into a stage play, because live television is very contained. You only have a couple of sets at most, and that works if you want to transform it for the stage. So that's what we did. That's when Paul Gregory picked it up and became a hit as a stage play across the country. And then, as I said, 3-4 later, years later, we sold it to Universal. But what we found out was, even though the cop was not really a minor character, but he didn't have the amount of time on the stage occupied by the murdering psychiatrist, who in the play was Joseph Cotten, who was then a big movie star.
A major star, for sure.
Yeah. And Columbo was played by Thomas Mitchell, a wonderful character actor. He was the drunken doctor in Stagecoach. He was the father in Gone with the Wind. He had played cops on the screen in The Dark Mirror and in other movies way back then. And the first time we saw a preview in San Francisco We couldn't believe it. Cotton came out at the end and got good applause. And then Thomas Mitchell came out in the raincoat and the cigar, and the place went wild. And Dick and I said to each other, well, that, you know, we created a lot of cops. What does this guy Columbo have? I mean, what's so special? The audience really eats this guy up. And as the years went by, we found out, you know, the television show became a hit all over the world. It's incredible. The original play, Prescription Murder, while we speak, is touring Great Britain. And there's a chance it might come into the West End. The French love Columbo. The Japanese were here at my home 2 years ago, filming an hour and a half interview, you know, interviewing me about the cop. So it goes on and on, which is great.
Well, I found it interesting that when you were thinking about a TV series, you had Bing Crosby in mind for the role.
Yeah, I know, that sounds weird. But back then, back then you got to remember, he was known for the pipe, so you substitute a cigar. He was a nice-looking man.
Yeah.
He was terrific with the humor. We know that from, you know, the
sure.
pictures he did with Bob Hope, the road pictures.
Absolutely.
So he wasn't too far out. We sent him the script, and he sent us a very nice letter saying he wishes the very best for the script. He really liked it. But he did two variety specials for CBS every year, and he was going to stick to that because he was getting older. And he heard that doing a television series was really a grind, which it is. So he passed on it, and we were fortunate because 4 years later, he dropped dead of a heart attack playing golf in Madrid.
Well, I guess it's only in retrospect that Peter Falk is just so entrenched in our mind as the character. It's hard to imagine anybody else as his
own. Yeah, well, you know, see, the stage play is still being done all over the place. And there have been many other Columbos on the stage.
I guess it's Dirk Benedict's doing it now, right?
Yes. I don't remember him. He's on Star Trek, right?
I don't remember. Star Trek. I remember the name. Seems like he's a lot of movies, but I don't remember him with.
I think he's a little too attractive, as we'll say, too good looking. See, we got Falk. Falk is not a bad-looking guy in any sense of the word, but he looks like an everyman, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a guy you see walking on the street past you, you know, if you're in New York or someplace else. And he's not a tall guy. That's also good. And Peter, in real life, shares some of the Columbo characteristics. He stumbles around a bit. I remember the studio. He used to lose his car keys all the time. We'd have to send a messenger to his house. But the great thing was he was so obsessed with that character, so intensely, and you want a star like that. And he was so hard on the scripts, and you want that too, especially the ending when Columbo comes up with the big clue that Peter called the pop. The pop's got to be terrific. I'm imitating him.
Why not?
He doesn't like that a lot, but and it's not very good. But the pop had to be great. And, you know, you can't come up with a great last clue all the times. You know, it would drive us crazy. Sometimes we could get a real good one. It's like we had a wonderful writer, wrote some of the shows. His name was Jackson Gillis. He had written a lot of the Perry Masons. He was the story editor on that show. So he knew mysteries, and he knew construction. And Jackson came up with a clue. Dick and I couldn't come up with one. Jackson came up with a clue that absolutely knocked us out, and that was Columbo traps the killer with fingerprints, not Columbo's fingerprints, the murderer's fingerprints. Now, that's a doozy. To my knowledge, it had never, never been done before in a mystery. And I've read hundreds of mysteries, you know, through the years. So we were really beholden to Jackson because he really got us out of a hole. We had an air date 4 days later, and Dick and I couldn't come up with anything. and he bailed us out.
Who came up with the idea of your inverted construction, by which, I mean, in the first, 20, 30 minutes of an episode sometime, we don't even see Columbo. We see the killer and see how he does it, and then when Columbo comes on, and we got to watch how he figures it out. Who came up with that idea?
We did, and, we based the character, which you said in a million interviews, on Dostoevsky's Inspector Petrovich, in the great classic Crime and Punishment, the Dostoevsky model.
Oh, sure. And, badger that guy.
Yes, yes. You can read. The Brits, when they were over here filming me, they came over here too, the BBC, and they had me read some passages from Crime and Punishment. No one ever before had Dick and me do that. That's how shrewd they were. And you could hear Columbo, in the Inspector, when he was, dealing with the murderer, the young college kid who
To pronounce his name, Rabrilovich or something like that.
Yes, something. He had this Nietzschean philosophy that certain people can kill and they can get away with it. He kills his landlady in Crime and Punishment. But you could hear him, or you could hear Petrovich, the cop, the inspector. There's a little bit, of Columbo in there, and that's where we got it.
When I first saw the original episode, I didn't get the idea that it was, well, I saw it years later after the series had been on for a while, and I didn't get the idea that the formula had really gelled yet. The Peter Falk seemed a little bit more aggressive, that he was... I didn't even think he was in a raincoat in that first pilot, was he?
It was Peter's own raincoat that he had bought in a clothing store when he was caught in a rain squall on 57th Street in New York City. He ducked into the store because he hadn't read the weather report, and it was pouring rain, so he bought the raincoat. And we reused that raincoat for many years on Columbo. The wardrobe department made two backups in case that that coat was torn or anything. But that coat lasted, and Peter Falk always tells audiences, or he used to, that that coat hangs in his upstairs closet in his home in Beverly Hills, and every night he puts out a bowl of milk for it. He's got a wonderful sense of humor, Peter. And that really, that added to Columbo. I had never seen, neither had Dick, Columbo play on the big screen for an audience. I mean, we saw Columbo at our homes, with our wives, and, the shows we had put together, and, it was just us and our wives. But the Museum of Broadcasting out here and the Directors Guild, they had big screen of filmings. I think they did the second pilot, Ransom for a Dead Man, the one with Lee Grant. With an audience, it was laughter throughout the picture. And the laughter was at Columbo. The way he walked, the way he looked at people, it was amazing. And, it played almost like a comedy.
Oh, I
couldn't believe it. But that's all fine. If they want to take it, with a comedic spin, great.
I think Peter did a lot of that. Was it true that he would kind of improvise things on the set to throw off the guy playing the villain?
Not dialogue. Peter would not improvise dialogue. That script was sacrosanct. That was the Bible. You do not change a word.
Wrong.
Yeah, and if one of his antagonists, one of the actors, had changed stuff, they'd have to do another take till the guy got it right. And boy, you want an actor like that, your lead actor. That's an 800-pound gorilla, that not only likes bananas, he likes the exact way the script, is performed.
Well, I've got to ask one question for my Prisoner fans, is that you had a number of episodes that starred Patrick McGoohan.
Oh, loved him.
And he was,
he passed, I think, what, 2 years ago out here.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, well, we loved him. And we loved him and Jack Cassidy. Jack Cassidy was another one of our favorites, those two. And Peter loved both of them, too. And that's what we used them whenever we could get them. But then Cassidy died. I think a lit cigarette went up in his mattress. And that was terrible when that happened. So couldn't get him again. It was always important on Columbo to have a very powerful antagonist against Columbo. And also, you know, we played the class game. Mm-hmm. Columbo always went up against the rich, you know, the wealthy. Mm-hmm. The New York Times said back then, it's almost as if Columbo was captured by a helicopter while he was eating a hot dog in the stands at Yankee Stadium, watching a game, and dropped into a wealthy murderer's backyard in Brentwood. And that's a very wealthy area out here in Los Angeles. And they were right. We played the class card, and it worked for us. Because a lot of people, you know, who watched the series all over the world, they weren't wealthy. And, you know, they identified more with the cop, you know, who started with nothing, who was against these arrogant, wealthy murderers, men and women, and he wins out. So that was a big plus, we thought.
Now, why did you decide after all these years to return to Columbo and do an anthology of short stories?
Well, because through the years, especially after Dick's death, I've sold many, many short stories, as you mentioned before, to the Hitchcock magazine, but mostly to Janet Hutchings, who's the head of the Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine. I'm sending her two more stories this week, two new ones, not Columbo. And I figured, you know, I did all these, you know, stories with other heroes and, you know, other villains, but the most popular show Dick and I ever conceived was Columbo. Why not write some Columbo short stories, which I can do in my sleep? And so that's what I did. And then a publisher came around and said, hey, I'll do these, and that's it. They're out there now.
Do you feel there's any differences between the short stories and the longer movies? Well, obviously, length is one thing, but
yeah.
I remember when I read them, I also noticed that there's the guys are using cell phones and things like that. They weren't around back in the 70s
and
80s.
No. Yes, some of the short stories have unknown murders. Columbo was always a will he catch him? You always knew who the murderer was at the beginning for the first 17, 18 minutes, you know, of the show. And that, you know, when we first started the series, that bugged NBC, and they said, well, people won't wait around to see when Columbo comes in. And we said, trust us, they will wait to see Peter Falk as Columbo. And, of course, we were right. For many years, we were the number one show. So that's how I changed the format in the short stories. Some were murder mysteries, unknown killers, and some were the exact way we did them on the air.
In some of those stories, I also noticed that we get some revelations about the character. Because, I mean, Lieutenant Columbo is always an enigma. We don't know his first name.
Right.
And we're not really sure about his family. He seems to have more nieces and cousins and uncles and aunts than probably anybody. Is that by design to kind of have, give him this enigmatic background? We never see his wife and
yes,
all that?
Yes, absolutely. We had a pact with Peter Falk very early in the show that we would never see the wife. I once said to Peter, you know, maybe Columbo is a bachelor who lives in a walk-up apartment by himself, and all these nephews and uncles and, you know, nieces that he talks about, Maybe they're just he uses that at times to confuse the murderer. Maybe they don't exist. Peter did not like that at all. He thought, no, they really exist. And look, if that's what he thought, fine. You know, we never got into that. But you never saw Mrs. Columbo, and you'll never see her in the short stories either.
That's right. I gather you didn't think much of the spinoff series with, what was that, Kate McGraw?
Awful.
I didn't think much of that one either. I just,
you know who we wanted? We wanted Kate Mulgrew is a good actress. She's from Canada,
yeah.
And I have nothing against her acting. But I don't think, you know, she was too attractive to be a Mrs. Columbo. We wanted somebody like Brenda Vaccaro, you know, who isn't an ugly woman by any sense. But if you know what I mean, if you remember her, she was more like Peter in the looks department and the way she acted. I could believe that she was an Italian cop's Italian wife, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're right. So, Kate did seem like she's kind of too cute and pretty and...
No. That was the cliche in all the other television series. Dick and I always wanted to break cliches if we could in a good way. And I think that's what we accomplished in a lot of things that we did. All this Dick and I thought out way ahead of time, you know, what we wanted to do. We had television in our veins up to our fingertips. We'd first started writing, you know, back when we met in junior high school, and there were wonderful live shows on then from New York. And they had wonderful writers writing a lot of them. The great Patty Chayefsky, who wrote Network, you know, when he went into feature films. Gore Vidal, you know, and others. And, you know, Dick and I grew up, you know, with those writers who were very, very good. And those people were our idols. Also, all the mystery books that we read. You know, we read Raymond Chandler. I don't know if you know George Simenon. He's a great Belgian.
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Yes, he has the McGray series, The Cop. And his standalone books without McGray, I think, are even better. But I've read over 200 of the Simenon novels. The Simenon novels. And it's incredible. The man wrote 600 books in his lifetime.
A few months ago, we had on Agatha Christie biographer Laura Thompson. Were you an Agatha Christie fan?
Oh, yeah. She was brilliant. Brilliant. One of the greats. And I think we're all influenced, even the people who haven't read Agatha Christie, you know, she has mutated, you know, in many other authors' works. And she absolutely was, the queen of mysteries during her time. I really hope she's still read. I don't know if she is.
Yeah, she's all still in print, and her fandom is just astonishing.
Good.
It's enormous. Don't worry about her legacy. Her series is still going on PBS even as we speak.
Yes, that's true. She was wonderful.
Well, alrighty. Well, sometime we're going to have to bring you back on and focus on Murder, She Wrote and the Cosby Mysteries and some other things. But
sure, my pleasure.
Today's our day for Columbo. So do you have any words for potential readers of your book? What will they find in it? You know, short stories that will be,
easy,
nice bedtime reading, because you can read three or four of these stories. You know,
sure. You can read them before bedtime if you don't have other more important things to do. I'll leave that up to the minds of your radio audience.
Yeah, I figured I'd dodge that one, Will.
And it's a great beach book, and I think it's a relaxing book, even though it's about murders. That's incredible. In fact, Columbo says that, I think, in Prescription Murder. He finds mysteries very relaxing. And that got a big laugh, usually from the audience. Mysteries, relaxing, well, you know, actually they are. I want to get a plug in. The book can be purchased on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. or Facebook, or they get it at my website, www.williamlink.tv. They can get it there if they're interested.
And in case we didn't make the title clear, it's the Columbo Collection.
Correct. William Link.
Yes, it's really easy.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you're at our website right now, www.audioentertainment.org, you can go down to the Persons of Interest page, click the link, and you'll find William Link.
Link to link. I like that.
And then you could pick up your copy. And it really is an enjoyable read. I posted
Thank
a review
so
of it at bookpleasures.com a couple months ago, and I advise it, you know, even if you're not a Columbo fan, if you're just a mystery fan, there's lots of stories in there that are diverting, entertaining, and I'm all for
it. A good introduction to the cop.
Yes, indeed. If you haven't watched the movies, and if you haven't watched the movies, I don't know what planet you've been on all this time. So we'll just wrap this up and say thanks, Bill, for appearing on Dave White Presents.